This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. At some point over this incredibly difficult pandemic year, you might have felt drained, overwhelmed, or maybe you were just stretched a little too thin, like you wish you could just be lazy. It's possible, though, you've also felt shame around the word laziness and you being called lazy, especially now with so much going on in the world, as a pretty significant insult. My next guest argues laziness does not exist, however, and says our society is facing twin pandemics, one with the coronavirus, the other around the lies we tell ourselves about productivity. Devin Price is a social psychologist and author of the new book, Laziness Does Not Exist. Price is also a clinical assistant professor in the School of Continuing Professional Studies at Loyola University, Chicago. Devin Price, thanks so much for joining us today on The 21st.
Hi. Yeah, Brian, thanks for having me.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, you can do so. The number to call is 800-222-9455. If you have a question or just want to talk about this idea that laziness does not exist, give us a call. Again, the number 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Okay, Devin, let's start with the title of your book, Laziness Does Not Exist. A lot of people might be listening and thinking, I use that word to describe how I'm feeling a lot during the pandemic, or maybe I just wish I could be lazy right now. But you say the concept of laziness is a myth. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so when I say laziness does not exist, it really comes down to, if you really think about it, no one would ever choose to lack the motivation to get something done that they value. So if somebody's setting out to do something or they agree that, you know, oh, it's important for me to do, you know, this thing, whether it's voting or, you know, keeping their house clean or going to school, and they're failing repeatedly to meet that goal that they do care about, that indicates there's some barriers that are in the way. And usually when you're looking at someone who does feel really inert or apathetic, maybe they have some learned helplessness because of just being in a really difficult situation, as so many of us are right now, it's usually a litany of barriers that are getting in the way of someone taking the action that they want to take. So it's not a moral failure. It's not laziness in that sense.
Do you think the pandemic has magnified this idea, this myth of laziness being out there in the world?
Yes, the pandemic has really revealed just how distorted our views of productivity and laziness really are. So one way that that's manifested is as soon as work from home and lockdown happened last March, a lot of companies immediately started reaching for productivity and employee monitoring tools because they were so afraid employees would just be lazy, quote unquote, and slack off at home. So they were monitoring people's keystrokes, monitoring people's screens, a huge investment in those kinds of spyware for employees. Even though what we found, there's been reports in Forbes, SBC Global, and a few other outlets, worker productivity actually has gone up since the pandemic started because really there's not much else for people to do, and no commute, and a lot fewer ways to spend our time. So people are working harder than ever before, but at the same time, we're being treated as if we're getting away with something. And that's really the dynamic that so many of us live under. It's just gotten even more extreme and absurd now.
So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about your own personal experience with the idea of overwork, this need, this drive for productivity, and what led you to this idea that the very concept of laziness is a lie?
Sure. So for much of my life, I was a good little virtuous worker bee. You know, I was in gifted education as a kid, so I got it really drilled into me that I had this potential that I needed to realize. So I finished college early. I finished grad school at 25, got my PhD at 25. I had a postdoctoral research position lined up right after that. And as soon as I finished my dissertation, I came down with a really horrible flu that didn't go away for months and months. I would basically just get 103 degree fever every night. And I was still trying to work and get exercise and everything during the day, despite the fact that I was so incredibly sick and debilitated. And that's what really started revealing to me that even if you can play by all of the rules that society lays out for you, that says you're supposed to exercise every day, work 40 plus hours a week, get educated, you know, even someone who was capable of doing all of those things, in my case, it didn't bring me health or happiness. It wasn't sustainable. And it just really made me question how we set people up to fail with these expectations.
And let me just mention again to our listeners that we're speaking with social psychologist Devin Price, author of the book Laziness Does Not Exist. They're also a clinical assistant professor in the School of Continuing Professional Studies at Loyola University Chicago. We're getting some calls in. We're going to ask you to hold on a second at 800-222-9455. You can just hold on for a couple minutes. I want to ask you, Devin, you also researched a bit about the history of laziness as a concept. How long has this been with us, and how has our definition of it changed over time?
The amazing thing about it is it hasn't really changed that much. So laziness as a word in English has been with us since the 1500s, and its two roots mean basically feeble or weak and morally corrupt. So since the very beginning, the idea of laziness is that a person has some kind of weakness, they need help in some way, and at the same time, that somehow makes them evil. So that weird doublespeak has always been with us. And in England, in the 1500s and 1600s, Puritans were really starting to kind of develop the idea that if a person was really motivated, that was a sign they were blessed. And if a person was not very motivated, let's say they were depressed, of course, they might not have had that concept at the time, that was a sign that the person was damned, basically. And that ideology.
What's the expression? Idle hands are the devil's workshop, I think.
Yeah, exactly. The idea that if you're not using your time productively, you're a bad person. Which it makes sense when you're like a small colony that's really trying to eke out a survival in a wilderness that you're not, that you don't know anything about. So that ideology was very powerful in motivating people to work as the U.S. was colonizing. And it's also how we justified slavery, this idea that that we were enslaving Black people and that they needed structure in order to be saved. And there was a very productivity obsessed form of Christianity that was really pushed on enslaved people that kind of said, work is your salvation. And so it takes on slightly different shapes in the propaganda that we use to demonize laziness and to brand certain people as lazy. It changes a little bit over time. But really, since at least the 1500s, we've had this idea that there are people who are suffering, that it's their fault that they don't have motivation, or that they're depressed, or that they're excluded by society. And so it still haunts us in that way today.
I just want to share one of the tweets we got in from a regular tweeter and goes by An Ordinary Dame, who says, quote, laziness is a myth, an evil myth. I am so here for this, end quote. We are speaking with author Devin Price, whose book is Laziness Does Not Exist. They're also a clinical assistant professor in the School of Continuing Professional Studies at Loyola University, Chicago. We do want to take your calls. If you're on the line, hold on, please. We need to take a quick break here. If you have a question about laziness, maybe you're skeptical about the idea that there is no such thing as just laziness on its own without what's the word we would use today? Comorbidities that go along with that. You can give us a call. 800-222-9455 is the number. Once again, 800-222-9455. We're going to continue our conversation with Devin Price after a short break here on the 21st. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with social psychologist Devin Price, author of the book Laziness Does Not Exist. We want to take your calls at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Before we do that, Devin, before the break, we were talking about the sort of roots, the historical roots of laziness. I wonder, can you talk a little bit about how this idea of laziness has been used to stigmatize some groups more than others in the past?
Yeah, so where we kind of left off was talking about how laziness was really used to ideologically justify and indoctrinate kind of the logic of slavery when that was a part of America's kind of present. After abolition, it was still a really useful tool of kind of keeping kind of white working class people who were, you know, in relative poverty away from recently freed former slaves to kind of basically create political cartoons and messaging that said, you can't trust this group of people. They're lazy. They're just taking advantage of the system. And they're why you're suffering, basically. So we had around the turn of that, in the 1800s into the 1900s, a lot of propaganda on both sides, both portraying Black people as lazy and taking advantage of the system. And we also had the kind of white working class hillbilly kind of stereotype. And that kept those forces in part from kind of joining forces and kind of building more collective power and kind of lobbying for more workers' rights. Moving into the 20th century and into the present day, we still see echoes of that imagery used to demonize marginalized people. We see it in how fat people are stereotyped as being to blame for any health inequalities that they face, or just all being lazy, and that's why everyone's body who's larger, that's why they're larger. And we even see it with things like disability benefits, the idea that people might be just lazy and faking disability and don't actually deserve disability benefits. So it's amazing how laziness is used to justify almost every way that we marginalize people or push people to the side and don't get their needs met as a society.
All right, let's go to the phones. I want to start with Nancy is on the line from Winnebago County, line 4. Nancy, thanks for calling in today.
Hi, good afternoon. This is an excellent show. I wanted to comment in the movie Gone with the Wind, Miss Prissy, the assistant, when the Black woman was trying to help the woman have the baby, getting ready to have the baby, which was Olivia de Havilland, and she was going to have the baby. Well, Miss Prissy decided she was going to be kind of lazy there during the slavery times and not help out, and she dismissed her. Do you remember that? I wondered if he remembers that part of the movie.
No, I frankly have not. I think I saw that movie as a child, but I have not seen it in many, many decades. Devin Price, I don't know if you have any perspective on that. I'm not familiar with what they're talking about.
No, I actually haven't seen that movie, believe it or not. But yeah, it's certainly true that laziness, there was kind of, especially during the era of slavery, there was this weird doublespeak where it was considered like a mark of being aristocratic. If you were a wealthy, you know, slave-owning white to like have leisure time, that was a sign that you were refined. But if people who were enslaved wanted any kind of leisure or break, that was seen as like a sign of evil. So I think if that's what they're getting at, like that is something that I think we also still see today, valorizing certain people getting rest and resting in certain ways, and then shaming everyone else for having just basic needs for rest.
Right. All right. Thanks for the call, Nancy. I also want to take a call. Kathy is on line 1 from Champaign. Kathy, thanks for calling in.
I have a question and a comment. I'm an older woman, and I find the concept of the disciplined body really interesting in current culture. But my question is there a difference between laziness and indolence in terms of perception?
Okay. Thank you for the call, Kathy. We appreciate it. Devin, what about that? What about indolence versus laziness? This is, you know, the idea of avoiding activity or exertion, I guess, is the dictionary definition there. Do you draw a distinction in that?
No, I think I see maybe differences in degree. I think indolence and sloth and words like that are more obviously kind of sin laden and always used to mean like excess, eating too much, just never getting off the couch, like to a really extreme degree. Whereas lazy, you know, sometimes people will use it in a value neutral term, like I'm feeling lazy today, or I need a lazy Sunday or something like that. So every now and then we'll see a neutral usage of laziness, which is what I'd love to see us move more towards, of just listening to our bodies and saying, oh, this is just a sign of something that I need. It's not this evil force this indolence or sloth or gluttony or what have you, that if I give into it, it's just a, you know, an endless hole that I'm going to fall into. But I think right now the two concepts are very tied up, that we're afraid of being even a tiny bit lazy because we've been had it so drilled into us that that's evil and something to resist in ourselves.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for the call, Kathy, as well. You write, let me remind our listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with social psychologist Devin Price, whose book is Laziness Does Not Exist. And you write in the introduction of your book, quote, "I learned early on to time my self-worth to how productive I was. I had my reasons for worrying about the future." And you explain then that your dad grew up in Appalachia and was often worried about finances. Both of your parents had physically demanding jobs. Are certain groups of people more likely to use achievement as a form of, I don't know, self-protection, you know, feeling that way?
Yeah, I think if you are in any way marginalized or excluded in society or grew up in poverty, you really get the message that the only way you're ever going to get out of that is through your own sheer force of effort. So almost every burnt-out, overworked person that I interviewed for this book, it didn't matter where they were at class-wise now, they almost always came from working class or impoverished backgrounds and really had it drilled into them the same way that I had it from watching my dad, of thinking, okay, the world isn't going to take care of me. I'm going to have to solve the problem of my own kind of systematic exclusion and work so hard that I'm going to be okay. Even though for so many people and for a variety of economic reasons, that just that logic pays off for fewer and fewer people these days.
I'm wondering, and maybe this ties in back to what that caller had asked about the idea of indolence. I've got to imagine there are some listeners who are out there thinking, okay, let's say you take out the factors that we've talked about in terms of the marginalized groups, and you imagine the least marginalized, most privileged person you can think of, white, male, cisgender, affluent, whatever you want to say. And let's say they turn down a great job offer to instead live off a trust fund, play video games, right? I wonder, I also think of the characters at the end of the Pixar movie Wall-E, if you've ever seen that, or some of our listeners might have seen that. Is there ever a circumstance where you'd say, okay, maybe that person is at least a little lazy? Or do you think even that idea needs to be reframed?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I used to always wonder if people would ask me, like, do I think Donald Trump's lazy, for example? Like this portrait people have of a wealthy person who isn't hardworking. I think in those
And reportedly,
cases,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it was just reportedly Donald Trump spent much of his day watching television news, whether that, you know, compared to other presidents is the reporting we saw out of that.
Right, and a lot more time golfing. And for me, it comes down to values. Every person's time is fully accounted for. Every person makes choices about how they want to spend their time, and that reflects their values. And I think, as well as the forces, the external forces that shape them, and in some cases oppress them. So I think sometimes there are people who it's clear they're putting a lot of effort into something, and that might be something you or I do not agree with, right? So as much as, you know, Trump or some, you know, trust fund privileged person who might spend their time in ways that I would not morally agree with, you know, I look at someone like that and they're still making choices about what they enjoy and what they value. Trump obviously being someone who went to great lengths to get attention put a lot of effort into getting attention. It's not that he was only just sitting watching TV. So I really think that in cases like those, people still have motivations. It's just very, from my perspective, very warped and not valuing things like taking care of other people, thinking about, you know, the climate, taking care of society in the long term and things like that.
Okay, so what about people, though, who do have the perspective that you say was so looming large in your own experience, which is this idea of achievement, you know, as a form of protection, self-defense for people who can be caught in this mode of thinking that their productivity is their worth? Do you have strategies you can recommend for people reframing the way they think of themselves with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the first things is to really take stock of how you're spending your days, really observing what are the goals that you're setting out to do and how are you actually spending your time. So that can mean just actually keeping a schedule of how you're truly spending your time, not the aspirational schedule that we all have and to-do list every day. And then take a step back and think about what your values are in life. What's most important to you? What are the times in life or the activities that make you feel the most alive? and look at those two things, how you kind of want to be spending your time or ideally would be spending your time and how you're actually spending your time, and see where there's a disjoint. And a crucial part of this is find out things that you're putting time into that you actually don't care about, that you're just doing because society says you should be doing it. So for some people that may be keeping a really clean house and you can just let it slide and be a little bit messier and free up more time to spend time with your kids. For other people it might be not cooking, you know, any number of things that you feel like you're supposed to do. And if you don't do it, you're lazy. But maybe you can just let it go.
I wonder, we're hoping to have a conversation too in the coming weeks on this show with an author named Cal Newport, who his past books kind of focused on the individual and looking at Deep Work was one of the books. Digital Minimalism was another. Now he's sort of more turned his attention to the systems that sort of keep people sort of scatterbrained at work and feeling that their attention is being pulled in every direction. I wonder if this, you know, the Slack pings, the emails, these technologies that trap many of us in at least in the knowledge work sector, as they call it. Do you think that plays into this idea that maybe because we're spending our time on emails and messaging and not as much doing whatever the core function of our work should be, does that play into this idea of these feelings of frustration at our own quote unquote laziness?
Absolutely. Yeah, the data really backs that up. There's this phenomenon called work-life interference, which is just things like having a cell phone on you at all times. That means that email, Slack messages, work can just bleed into every waking moment of your day. And that's been bad ever since digital work tools existed. But in the pandemic, it's heightened to the point where a lot of people don't even see a boundary between work and life anymore. It's really all that they have and can do. And it's constantly getting in their way. So I think finding ways systematically to reduce that work-life interference is going to be a really important conversation for us to be having organizationally. I mean, it might even become a really important like workers' rights issue, the same way that we used to think about, you know, you're only supposed to work a certain number of hours per week. Maybe that also includes digital work time and being exposed to digital stress in the workplace, because it is really hard for people to ignore those notifications and not let it disrupt their day and cause them a lot of anxiety. So I think it's really unsustainable, and we're going to have to start really thinking about what to do about that.
Well, unfortunately, we just have about a minute left in our conversation. The last thing I want to ask you about is how we should replace the word laziness in our vocabulary. What are some alternatives you would suggest to help us reframe this concept?
Yeah, I think it means being really honest with ourselves about what emotions we're feeling and not judging those feelings. So am I feeling tired? Am I bored? Am I annoyed at my coworker? Am I overwhelmed? A lot of these things can present as laziness, and then we want to shut it away and not listen to it. But instead, we can actually listen to these emotions kind of descriptively and just notice them and say, okay, if I am feeling annoyed, can I step away? If I am having trouble focusing, does that mean I've done my maximum amount of focusing I can do for the day and I get to go take a walk or whatever else?
Devin Price is the author of the book, Laziness Does Not Exist. It's out now. Devin, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brian.
And that is all the time we have for today. Before we go, I do want to encourage you to subscribe to our podcast. You can find a link to it at our website, 21stshow.org. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, NPR One, everywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for The 21st. That's The 21st. Our program is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Chantal Vaca is our engagement producer. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.